Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Jonathan Witt. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute, the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. He's also the author of a book called Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Specifically, we're going to talk about a series of videos available at YouTube called Science Uprising, scienceuprising.com. For more information, you can actually see these videos. They're very, very well done. And Dr. Jonathan Witt, I understand you're a co-creator of this whole series. Tell us about that.
That's right, Jerry, and thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, it's been an exciting ride. We Discovery Institute, of course, one of our big issues at the Discovery Institute is intelligent design, getting the evidence for design in nature out to the world, countering a lot of the inflated claims of neo-Darwinism. But the way this began is we had a young filmmaker, David Arabia, approach us. He had raised some money and wanted to do something out of the box.
Yeah.
Initially, we talked about just doing another, you know, one-hour documentary. We'd had some success getting some documentaries on PBS. But he said, I want to do something outside the box, something really focused, targeted on young adults. Young adults are spend a lot of time on YouTube. They're not sitting down typically to one-hour documentaries. And so let's aim for that audience. Let's make it the style a little more fast-paced, a little more creative in the way we present it. And so we, John West, myself, Dave Arabia, went to work on this. Dave Arabia has some great contacts in the film television industry, so we're able to do a very high production value series of short films, 6 to 8 minutes long each, that really hammer home this growing evidence for design, whether it's in biology, physics, the origin of the universe, the origin of the first life. So it was a lot of fun.
And these films are being kind of, these are very short films, and then I guess there's a longer version attached to them, but these are all kind of being released 1 week at a time, something like that, but they'll all be available, you know, once it's released, it's available to be seen. But let's focus on this issue. What is a human being? What do the ultimate materialists say that a human being ultimately is? Versus what we actually instinctively feel and know.
Yeah, you take somebody like the atheist biologist Jerry Coyne, and we actually have him on screen.
Is that the guy with the beard and the glasses?
We have several atheists. So
yeah, okay.
At one point he says, "I'm here to convince you that you are robots made out of meat."
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's the guy with the glasses. Yeah.
Glasses. Yeah. Robots made out of meat. By that he means that we're purely products of Darwinian natural selection, evolution. That free will is an illusion. That we're pretty much the prisoner of our instincts, our DNA, and that this notion that we have free will, that we make actual choices, that's an illusion. And you can see once you go down that path, you take that extreme Darwinian view, you lose a sense of humans as exceptional, as having moral responsibility, as having something unique and a dignity about us beyond just, say, a plant or an animal. And so it can be a very destructive worldview.
Yeah.
Jerry Coyne would say, well, destructive or not, it's where the science points us. It's the truth. But we come back with our experts and point to evidence that says, no, the evidence is actually pointing in a different direction, that humans have a mind, we have a soul, that free will is real. We want to make sure that young people are seeing this other side of the story.
Yeah. Well, you know, think about something like the Holocaust. I mean, clearly the Holocaust is evil. You know, are the strict evolutionists basically saying, well, those Nazis, they did what they did because they were led down that path by the bile secreting through their kidneys, or, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm making stuff up, but
yeah, the extreme ones, and by extreme, I would say the philosophically consistent ones. Fortunately, most neo-Darwinists aren't philosophically consistent. They'll figure out a way to be materialist Darwinist, and yet somehow believe in free will, believe in mind, believe in, you know, the intrinsic value and worth of every human person, But the consistent ones, like Richard Dawkins, who says that we're just we're just survival machines for DNA. People like Jerry Coyne, who say we're just, you know, meat robots. Those guys are the consistent ones. But we say they're consistent, but they're actually at odds with the evidence. And so you don't have to go there. You don't have to end up in that dark, dreary view of humanity and the world.
With this series of films, Science Uprising, and I take it you were one of the creators of the film for Discovery Institute, correct?
Yeah, I was scripting. And script editing, you know, back and forth with Dave Arabia, John West, and I kind of put that together. Dave was leading on the technical video film editing side.
So you kind of like edited the science in effect.
Right. Yeah. And we had, because we're Discovery Institute, we've got this, you know, stable of scientists. So if there was ever anything that we were particularly concerned about the accuracy of, we could, you know, we could run it by somebody like Lehigh University biologist Behe. Michael Behe or a physicist. And so it's very accurate scientifically. And that was part of the tension, I think, that made this so good. We had Dave Arabia constantly pushing us, let's make this more accessible, more accessible, more accessible. And I'm saying, yeah, absolutely, but wait, we've got to tweak this because this phrasing here isn't quite accurate.
Yeah.
And so I think we ended up with a fantastically accessible but also rock-solid, scientifically accurate series.
Well, what kind of response have you been getting so far?
Well, we just Monday before last, we released the first one, this most recent Monday, the second one. And so we're just getting an outpouring. It's already starting to pile up hits on YouTube, but we're right at the front end of it. But in terms of people reaching out to us directly, we're getting extremely positive feedback. We showed it at one conference, and the young people were like, "Oh, this is so exciting! This really connects. I want to get, you know, my teacher at my private school to show this. I want my youth minister to start showing these." And so we're hoping that with help from those that watch it, that get excited about it, that we can go viral with this.
But yeah,
it's going to take people that watch it and love it, saying, "How can I share this on social media? Who can I recommend this to? That's maybe an influencer in my community. How can we spread this?"
As far as social media is concerned, there are a lot of legitimate complaints among conservatives, Christians, pro-lifers, etc. And the reports of this are so common and consistent that this is a problem of genuine censorship, you know, on the social media platforms. Now, maybe that's the wrong word to use, because censorship usually refers to the government, and these are all private companies and entities, but they're so big. It's like Prager, Dennis Prager, who was suing Google and YouTube and so forth, because they have literally categorized some of his thoughtful little 5-minute videos at Prager U as quote unquote pornography, or they put it on the same level as pornography. For example, an interpretation on what happened with the Korean War. You know, like, what? With Victor Davis Hanson explaining about the Korean War, and this is somehow on the same level as pornography. Same thing happened with Pinterest censoring.
Project Veritas?
Yeah, Project Veritas brought this to light, but Pinterest censoring Lila Rose with her pro-life videos.
Right, it's very worrisome. And so we're kind of, you know, there are probably good people that at these places like YouTube and Twitter that don't like this, but it seems like there's some people behind the steering wheel at some of these places that really are not committed to open dialogue and free speech on these platforms. So it is worrisome. So we're using them, but with a little bit of trepidation.
Sure.
You know, this is where a lot of the young people are right now. But it brings up a long-term, you know, all those that are trying to get the message out for, you know, pro-life, whether it's evidence for design and nature, et cetera, I think we need to be proactive about making sure we're not putting all our eggs, you know, in one basket in terms of our media strategies.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah, I like what Gary Bauer says about this. He says the left is not concerned about winning the debate these days. It's about shutting the debate down. Whoa.
Right.
Okay, so, tell me, did you used to believe, as far as when you used to believe in Darwin and so forth, did you believe that there was no such thing as love, no such thing as free will? Or was it more like, well, I never really thought through the implications of it?
Well, I'm one of those that has a less exciting story. I always believed in design, but I've worked with some amazing scientists who've traveled that journey, like my co-author Matti Lesola, the Finnish bioengineer that we co-wrote the book Heretic together. He was a thoroughgoing Darwinist, but he got challenged by the Christian apologist Francis Schaeffer and some others to think about why he got so touchy when his evolutionary thinking was challenged. And he thought, why would I be touchy if I'm so confident in my view? And so that started a journey for him. And then with his amazing knowledge and expertise on enzymes, he started realizing that there's no credible pathway for even enzymes, something as relatively simple as enzymes, to evolve. And you can't get any life going, even at the microscopic level, without enzymes. And so he ended up flipping and becoming pro-design. Hmm. So we got several guys like that in our movement that started out Darwinist, but then at some point they decided, you know what, I'm not just going to trust the Darwinian dogma. I'm going to follow the evidence and be open-minded about it. And some of them have suffered in terms of their career.
Sure.
So there's some really courageous men and women out there that paid a price for following the evidence and being committed to truth.
Well, Richard Dawkins would probably be the single most well-known dogmatic evolutionist. I mean, he would not accept anything that you guys put out with the Discovery Institute. But doesn't even he say, well, what we find in the universe is the appearance of design. And that's the key word to him, is appearance. But he's still talking about the appearance of what? Appearance of design. You know, it looks that way. But, of course, don't let your eyes fool you, you know.
Yeah, he actually defines biology as the study of things that have the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. So he kind of puts that out there, and then says, but it's an illusion. But then we counter and say, well, if you actually dig into the evidence, it's not an illusion. And they'll put up a brave front, the evolutionists, and say, oh, you know, everything's sealed, it's a fact. But then you get events like the at Cambridge recently, and then at the Royal Society in London, which is like the oldest scientific, most prestigious scientific site in the world, they're having these conferences where they're like, the current modern evolutionary synthesis is in big trouble. What are we going to do to patch it up without letting those intelligent design folks in the room? And so they're desperate behind the curtain, behind the scenes, to shore up what I see as a failing theory.
You know, I've been at the Royal Society of London. It was initially started, by the way, by Christians in the 1600s.
As was science.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Simplistic at all, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Charles II, when Charles II ascended the throne in, I think it was 1662 or maybe it was 1660. But anyway, that was one of the things he did, was help to start that. But he started, it started actually at Gresham College, which at the time was Puritan. And most of the people involved in the creation of it were Puritans, who believed that they were serving God through their science. Well, we have about a minute left. I didn't even realize that there have been recently some meetings along the lines of, how do we, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain? How do we shore up Darwinism? Is Darwinism losing intellectually in some cases?
Yeah, I think it is. And so they're desperately looking for kind of ancillary tools. In other words, genetic drift, neutral evolution, natural genetic engineering. They're coming up with all these patches, but all those patches have problems too. You just don't get new, novel biological information from blind processes. That takes intelligence.
I see what you mean. Okay, and plus, if you have just blind processes and so forth, then how can you possibly say there is such a thing as right and wrong? And by the way, I read word for word Darwin, you know, The God Delusion by Dawkins, and he does imply in that book, well, such and such that the church did, that's wrong. Oh, you mean Mr. Dawkins or Dr. Dawkins, there is such a thing as right and wrong? I thought in your worldview there is no such thing. But we're basically out of time. How about a closing thought in 15 seconds?
Yeah, that said that they're consistent, guys like Jerry Coyne and Richard Dawkins, but if you watch them long enough, they have righteous indignation. So they can't help but have this sense that there is a moral order, that there's a right and wrong, as twisted as their moral compass is, that they still believe in a higher morality.
Dr. Jonathan Witt, thanks for being with us. ScienceUprising.com for more information and to see the little videos. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Dave.